Well, welcome to this edition of the FitCast. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me today is Tony Gentilcore. You may remember him from his many appearances on the FitCast and, you know, his time as a co-host. And also, he is now just blowing it up at TonyGentilcore.com. And as of late, the Huffington Post got a post up there as well. Tony, what's up, man?
That's kind of cool. That happened yesterday. Adam Bornstein, my editor at Livestrong, mentioned to me that one of my articles was picked up by them yesterday, which I thought was kind of cool.
So how does that happen? Did they just, like, you know, scour the internet for articles?
You know, I think what happens is that's such a huge website. I think their Alexa rankings, like, in the top 100, that I think that they have an affiliation with Livestrong.
Oh, cool.
So I think what they must have just saw my article and thought it would have been a good fit for them, and they just put it up. So I didn't even know. Adam literally emailed me. He's like, emailed me the link and was like, hey, I thought you would like to see this. And I clicked on and saw where it was, which I thought was pretty cool.
It is indeed very cool.
What's up with you? It's been like a year and a half since I've been on. What's going on?
Yeah, we've been staying busy. We've been doing these great talking shop segments with our guests. You know, the way things are in everyone's lives is that, nice. You know, John and Lee are very busy. So it's a lot easier to kind of just grab people on the phone. You know how you kind of like just call people up and, you know, that's in the industry and you just kind of pick their brains. You just figured we record it.
Yeah, nice. That's always a fun thing to do.
It is. It's a blast. But, you know, we decided to bring you back on, you know, not only because we haven't talked in a while, but because, you know, you do seem to have a pretty steady, you know, amount of posts on your website. I mean,
I try.
You stay on top of it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I just made a concerted effort to break up my day to where I can get stuff done in the mornings. I tend to do all my blogging in the morning, so I'll wake up, eat breakfast, check my emails. You know, I'll write a blog usually before I head over to work, which, you know, I got like a 45-minute commute to work every day. So I try to get as much done as I can beforehand before I go to work. Cause when I'm there, I'm pretty much on the floor coaching for 7-8 hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my girlfriend, now that we're living together, it doesn't kind of frowns upon me showing up when I get home, like, hey, I got to go write some programs and go rewrite my blog. That's not usually going to fly very well. So I try to get all that done in the morning, and I'm trying to stay consistent with it, and it's definitely paid off. So I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, are you still in an apartment, or did you get a house? Or
yeah, no, we got an apartment in Brookline, which is right in the city of Boston.
Nice.
So we're outside a very, very cool area that everything's within walking distance. I got Trader Joe's, like a 5-minute walk from me.
Awesome.
Panera, Starbucks. So I'm kind of in geek heaven. I can walk down and do some work, and I apologize. They're doing construction outside, of course. So if you hear anything, any machines out, I apologize for that.
Perfectly all right. One of the things I will recommend, and something I just tried out for the first time yesterday, is I got this Weber electric grill that is like a portable grill. You know, it's like, it runs up almost like $200, but the chicken that I grilled last night was just the best tasting chicken I've ever had, and amazing coming from an electric grill. If you've ever done like a Foreman thing.
Yeah, that's something you need to look into, because being in the city, they don't allow you to have grills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely, I definitely need to look into that.
Oh, it was amazing. And it's guaranteed to grill a steak perfectly. It has this, amazing high heat coils or something in it. Vidal, I'll shoot you some info on that, but we're here to talk about you and, you know, talk about what you've been up to.
Yeah, it's about me, damn it.
I know, come on. But we, you know, one of the cool things that you're always posting about is the assessments and mm-hmm. and testing and things that you guys do at CP. You know, people are always kind of looking for new ways to assess their clients and athletes. You know, what are some of the few that you kind of, you know, always are your go-to assessments that give you a ton of feedback and a ton of information for when it comes to addressing any kind of asymmetries and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, we get a pretty eclectic group of people that walk into CP. I mean, obviously, we have a ton of baseball players, so we have a set protocol that we do with them. But really, in the grand scheme of things, we've kind of molded our assessment format into something that we found that has worked well for everyone. Like, we always, I mean, you've heard Bill Hartman say, you've heard Mike Robertson say, you've heard Eric say it, that everything is an assessment. So literally, as soon as somebody walks in the door, we're looking at their posture, their gait, how they sit in the chair, you know, and if someone's coming in talking about you know, lower back pain or their shoulder hurts or their neck pain. All that stuff is going to kind of play into what we're going to do from a programming standpoint. And then usually from there, we take them out onto the table, take their shoes off. And, you know, there's probably a set list of, you know, 10 to 15 set assessments that we do on the table. So we're testing hip range of motion, internal, external rotation. We're looking at glenohumeral range of motion. So we're testing internal, external rotation. We're looking at shoulder flexion. We do something called the lumbar lat rotation, which is something that we got from Greg Rose from the Titleist Institute. That's a really great way of looking at thoracic rotation, any asymmetries with that. But really, you know, when you look at the staples, like I think something like the Thomas test is always going to be an important and integral assessment tool to use, just because it's going to tell you a lot what's going down in that lower body with the psoas and the hip flexors and the TFL. I think another important one that we like to use is the overhead squat. Like once we get people off the table, we want to get them moving. We want to see how they move. So in the overhead squat, in the grand scheme of things, is a very, very good tool to use just to see what all the joints in the body are doing to do a basic human movement pattern. So, you know, a lot can be told just from watching someone do an overhead squat, like their ankle mobility, you know, are the knees caving in? Do you have to lean forward? So, you know, and then from there, it's just really a lot of our assessment is just watching technique. So I would say on average, when someone comes in for their initial eval, we're doing the quote unquote assessment within 15, 20 minutes. And that's not to say we don't spend more time with people who really need it. But, you know, if I have a healthy person coming in, the last thing I want to do is spend an hour assessing, you know, big toe dorsiflexion. You know, it's not really going to tell me anything. So we're both Eric and I and Chris are much more of a fan of getting people on the floor and watching them move, see what their deadlift pattern looks like, looking to see what their lunge pattern looks like. Can they do a proper push-up? Can they do like a standing cable roll without a compensation pattern with the scapula? So a lot of our assessment, while we do the table stuff that we think is important, it's just seeing how people move in general.
How do you feel about, you know, when people tend to say, for example, do an overhead squat and you see them, they do it incredibly poorly, you see those knees caving in, they're literally almost about to fall forward. You then re-cue them and say, all right, I want you to keep your knees out, stay in your heels, then try to do it again.
Sure. I might do one where we the first, I guess, progression we would use would be, or the how we initiate it is, you know, feet shoulder width apart, toes pointing forward, mm-hmm. straight overhead. Let's see what it looks like. You know, more often than not, it's going to be, you know, your eyes are going to bleed and it's just not going to look good. Mm-hmm. So from there, I might say, okay, let's widen your stance a little bit, point your toes out. Because really that's a more natural way of squatting anyways. Like very rarely, we don't coach people to squat with their toes pointing straight ahead. And, you know, we want them to get a little bit of external rotation. So that usually cleans it up a little bit. And if I have to, I might just say, I want them to lock their hands behind their head because I will take the lats out of the equation. I want to see if that is a limiting factor. And then of course we'll do the heel lift too, just to see if that cleans it up. And that will tell you a lot about ankle mobility and see how that comes into play. So, I mean, yeah, there's always going to be cueing and coaching and, you know, tweaking this and tweaking that. So, you know, I want to see what it looks like without any coaching first, just to see what they do. Mm-hmm. And then I'll tweak it a little bit to see if I can make it look better. And that kind of feeds to me what I need to do moving forward.
It's really interesting to see kind of where the industry has gone in the last couple of years and how big of a role assessments have kind of played in that, where you see, you know, the stuff like the functional movement screen is out there now. And, you know, a lot of people are you know, writing articles or coming out with products to kind of show you the best way to assess people. And one of the things that I think has come up is that, you know, people are really just over assessing and, you know, saying, all right, if you get a unless you get a 3 in an FMS, then you can't do anything. Like, unless you get like a perfect score in the FMS, no, we're not going to do anything but bodyweight movement. But the thing that I love, and I'm a little bit biased, as I, you know, got the majority of my initial training experience from you guys at CP. But like you said, you like to say, all right, let's look at their deadlifting pattern. Let's, you know, let's put some weight on the bar and see how they move under load.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more, and think that, you know, assessment's important. Let's not forget that. Like, if you're not assessing, like, you're not doing your job, because that's going to lay the foundation of the programming. But I do feel that there's a lot of fitness professionals out there that feel they need to kind of showboat and do all these smoke and mirrors assessments to kind of prove to their clients or athletes that they're smart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, use big words and this and that. And I mean, yeah, that can work, but really, I just think, you know, when you're spending, I mean, there's sometimes where some assessments take 2 days.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you got to get these people a training effect. I mean, you know, it just seems absurd to me. I mean, like I said, there might be extenuating circumstances where you have somebody who's really beat up and they just can't move very well, and you kind of have to take a little bit more time with them. But more often than not, you just got to get them on the floor and get them moving and see what shakes free.
And again, kind of going back to what you said, you know, the smoke and mirrors thing, when I go and look at the FMS, I think one of the biggest things that people are like, you know, it's a selling tool. I understand that. It's to show people, all right, here, look at, you know, there's this and this and this going on, and we can definitely clean it up. You know, it shouldn't take too long. But if you look at like the rotary stability test, where no one ever gets that. No one can do that. I've never seen anyone that gets, even a 2 on that, because people just don't move like that until they start some kind of strength training program or some kind of, you know, movement program.
And I love the FMS. Like, there's certain stages of it that and pieces of it that we use, and you know, as well as assess and correct, and, you know, there's stuff we take them from Nick Tumanello and, you know, Brett Contreras and all these other guys. So, I mean, it just comes down to finding what you feel works. But I do think there's a set basis of specific assessment tools that people should use. And that's what I alluded to before with the Thomas test and the table work and stuff like that. But certainly whatever you use, whether it's the FMS or, you know, the NASM protocol, it's something, and that's definitely better than nothing.
Yeah. And definitely, like you said, you know, don't be afraid to make it, you know, specific for that population, whether it be baseball players or an office worker or something like that.
Yep. I mean, our baseball assessment, I mean, when our guys come in for the off season, you know, they just spent the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months throwing a baseball and hitting a baseball. Mm-hmm. They're going to be coming in pretty beat up, and they're going to come in with some pretty predictive asymmetries and imbalances. Mm-hmm. But we know we're looking at a lot. I mean, we're a lot more thorough with them. Like, we literally get the goniometer out, and we're measuring internal rotation, external rotation, total range of motion. So we get a little bit more specific with them. But certainly, yeah, even with general population, I mean, there's certain tests that we like to use. And, you know, like I said, it just lays that foundation for really solid programming moving forward.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on a little bit more into the training aspect. You do train a majority of the ladies at Crest Performance. Like, you know, you actually have a group of females that, at least last time that I was there, that, you know, they come in, they kind of train together. And I've been talking with the last couple of weeks, you know, with some female trainers and coaches like Allie McKee and Rachel Cosgrove about how they like to, you know, if the training whatsoever should be differentiated between females and males. You know, we've heard that mantra, you know, just, you know, women should lift like guys lift, which to a certain extent is, you know, we can all agree with. But, you know, how do you change things up? Like, if you got a male personal training client versus a female personal training client?
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky, and I've probably talked about this before, that, you know, when people walk through our doors, they kind of already know what they're getting themselves into. I mean, I'm sure you get that even at Boyle's. Like, people know what the philosophy is, what the training environment's going to be like. So there's no real surprises when they walk through our doors. With a lot of the ladies that come in, they're either through word of mouth or through my blog or even Eric's blog, and you know, they want to get stronger. And I you know, given that a lot of the popular media like People Magazine or, you know, OK Magazine, not that I read them, but they they kind of feed into and placate this notion that women shouldn't lift appreciable weight, and it's all about high rep and, you know, doing yoga and Pilates and, you know, eating celery sticks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't agree with that. I think women, you know, if anything, yeah, there's a certain degree where we want to get them to train like the boys, but there's certain stuff that I might tweak a little bit, because I know women are very concerned about having big thighs. They want to fit into their good jeans that they wear out on a Friday night. So there's definitely certain things that I won't do. Like, you know, I'm not really concerned about loading their box squats, for example. You know, I might emphasize more one-legged RDL variations. Maybe push the prior a little bit. Focus a lot more on bridging, like Brett Contreras with the hip thrusters. I'm doing a lot more with our female clients, and lately it's like they're dead set on getting their chin ups. Like I want to say every female client we've got can do an actual full on chin up. And not only that, they can do it for reps. So, you know, we're hammering chin ups and we're doing push ups and they're doing deadlift variations, but, yeah, they're doing a lot of the same things that guys are doing, but sometimes I'm tweaking it a little bit just because I know a lot of them are concerned about being able to fit into those jeans on a weekly basis.
That makes sense. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about nutrition, because that is something you hit on quite a bit, whether it be, you know, having to eat more kale or...
My favorite shirt.
I know that's your favorite shirt, and I've actually seen someone else wear like I love kale shirt.
Yeah, yeah. That's, so if people don't know, recognize, like last year for my birthday, my girlfriend got me this T-shirt that literally on the front of it says "Eat more kale," and like it was funny because like a couple weeks ago, I walked down on a Friday night into Coolidge Corner, which is an area in Boston. I usually just go to the coffee shop and do some work, but I wore that shirt, and I literally had like six people give me a high five. I eat kale too. Like it was like some kind of like club or something. It was awesome.
So how do you like to utilize kale? Do you just put it in your shakes, or do you like
throw? No, putting it in shakes, it's a little too strong to put in shakes, because okay. Like it's one thing to use spinach. Like I use fresh, you know, baby spinach out of a bag. Lately I just been rocking that, and it's an easy and convenient way to get more vegetables in your diet. Just put it in your shake. Add some almond milk, put some fruit in, put some protein powder, whatever, and you don't taste it. Like, it looks like ass, and it doesn't look remotely appetizing, but it tastes – you don't taste the spinach at all. But it's an easy and convenient way to get more vegetables in your diet. But with kale, that's a little too strong. Like you definitely taste it, and it doesn't taste good. Mm-hmm. But really, all we do is we have a steamer that we steam the kale in, and once it will turn like a very, very – dark green when it's ready, and we just, you know, we make some ginger vinaigrette and, you know, put a meat on there, and then we just chow it down. So I mean, it's pretty easy to make, and you know, I'm sure there's a ton of recipes out there that involve kale, but you know, I'm pretty simple. I just steam it, put some vinaigrette on it, and eat it that way.
I will say that Dave Rack has carried on the spinach legacy, and yeah. I saw him like after we were lifting a couple weeks ago pull out a green shake. I'm like, holy crap, Tony Tucker. Oh, yeah. Isn't he?
It's like I literally bring a blender to like the actual container, like a big ass blender to work. Like I make it at home, but I just it's too much volume, so I just keep it in the blender, and I take it to work with me. And the shades of colors that I end up drinking is pretty ridiculous, and people look at me like I have two heads. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, it's interesting to get the looks. People are like, "What the hell are you drinking?" Mm-hmm. And once I tell them, they give me the look like, "Are you kidding me?" Like, and I'm like, "Try it." And like more often than not, like, "Oh, that tastes pretty good." And but it trust me, it looks gross, but you don't taste it. It's awesome.
Gotcha. We'll keep moving on just because we are a little crunch for time. Unfortunately, I had some computer problems. But all right, let's talk a little bit about. I mean, obviously you have you know, you're part of a new product, Muscle Imbalances Revealed, the upper body. But before we get to that, I want to ask you what are some of the most common upper body imbalances that you tend to see, like in the general population? Obviously, you deal with a lot of you know, baseball players, so you're going to see a lot of the you know, overly internally rotated people, but I guess that's going to happen in the general populations as well. Yes. You know, or just for example, what are the most, you know, common imbalances that you see, and, you know, what are the easiest ways to fix them?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking impingement, everyone has impingement, and it's really a garbage term anyways, because really everyone's walking around with an impingement. It's just whether or not they're symptomatic or not. You know, then we can talk into external impingement versus internal impingement. Internal impingement is going to be more common in overhead athletes and younger overhead athletes. So, and then external impingement is more in the lay population, general population. And then even with external impingement, that's subdivided into two categories, in primary and secondary. But really, when we're talking about impingement, it's just that rotator cuff getting impinged in that acromion space. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's going to be, you know, due to poor programming. You know, the guy that bench presses three times a week and doesn't do any rowing. It's going to be postural imbalances, like they're sitting in front of the computer all day. It's going to be, you know, acromion type. It could be poor thoracic mobility. It could be poor scapular stability. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, there's really like 10 different factors that we look at when we look at shoulder health. But really just making, if I had to just make a general commentary on it, it would just be like making sure our programming is a little bit more balanced. But even then, it's kind of like you have to unbalance it to balance it. So most people are going to say like, hey, we need to do, you know, one rowing movement for every one pushing, where in reality, we're looking at, okay, maybe it's better to do 2 to 3 rowing movements compared to one, just to kind of balance things up that way. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we guys look into soft tissue restrictions. I think, you know, foam rolling is great, but I think if you really want to fix stuff, you have to get a manual therapist in there to get his or her thumbs in there and start, you know, getting at that pec minor, getting at the subscap, you know, and then when we talk about corrective strategies, we're doing a ton more lower trap emphasis on all of our clients at Crusty Performance. Just because I mean, obviously with our baseball players, you want to improve upward rotation, but you know, the lower traps are very weak in just about everyone. And I think Mike Reinhold was the one that put it on his blog a few months ago, where he showed a study that people with upper trap dominance that tend to shrug everything leads to superior migration of that humeral head, which will lead to impingement. So getting those lower traps stronger are going to be a huge deal for a lot of people as well.
Very cool. Before we do wrap things up, can you talk a little bit about the product and kind of, you know, people might have seen the first edition. This is kind of like the second edition that's addressing the upper body. Can you talk a little bit about the product and kind of your involvement?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool. I mean, people weren't familiar with it. About a year ago, Rick Kiselage did muscle imbalances real lower body, which included the likes of Mike Robertson and Bill Hartman, amongst other, you know, a few other people. And that was a very popular product. I watched it, thought it was fantastic. And basically what it is, you know, all the presenters are doing 1 to 2 PowerPoint presentations that are recorded. And it's like basically you're watching a webinar. Mm-hmm. You know, about a few months ago, Rick had contacted me and asked if I'd be interested in contributing to the upper body version, which also includes himself, Dean Somerset, and Dr. Jeff Kubos. And basically, we each did 2 presentations, all dealing with upper body stuff. Like Rick did a lot of neck stuff. Dr. Jeff Kubos did some breathing pattern stuff and soft tissue stuff. Dean talked a lot about fascia and how that comes into play. And I did more along the lines of programming and like common mistakes I see and common pathologies that we come across at our facility, like rotator cuff stuff, AC joint issues, and stuff like that. So it's been great. Like, I've been talking about doing a product for a while now. I was always reluctant just because I'm like, that's a pretty big step to do a product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt for me to kind of get my foot in the door would be a good idea to collaborate with a bunch of other smart dudes and kind of ease my way into it. And this is the perfect way to do it. Like, Rick did a fantastic job, as did Dean and Jeff. And we really hope and think that it's a very valuable product for fitness professionals to use, that they can use on themselves and with their clients moving forward. You know, it deals with everything from corrective exercise to soft tissue stuff to programming. So anything and everything you can think about with, in terms of, you know, stuff that you see going wrong with the upper body, whether it's core stuff, lower back, shoulder stuff, we kind of address it. And we're looking to do an actual seminar next year up in Canada that we're going to record. So all of us are going to get together and kind of do a weekend series of it as well. So it looks like it might turn into a pretty big series. So anyone who, I highly encourage anyone to, if they like the first one, to pick up the second one, but mm-hmm. certainly if they're interested in upper body stuff, to give it a look.
No, and I think this is a great age where we've kind of reached that point where the information is so accessible, and you know, you can just watch the stuff at your computer. You don't have to, you know, spend $1,000 or $2,000 to travel across the country or to another part of the world to kind of see this stuff. You can just sit on your butt and do it at your convenience, and it allows you to. I mean, I think the big thing is when people go to like a seminar, things tend to be like crunched into like an hour and a half spot, right, where, you know, you can only get so much into that hour and a half and you can't kind of go back over stuff. You know, this allows you to, you know, get the information, then go back, look at the information again, and then, sure, you know, you can always, you know, think up some questions at the end of that. So,
yeah. And the cool thing about this is that, we're going to be releasing a DVD version in a couple of weeks, but literally like it's, you can watch it on your computer. So it's very, very convenient.
Very cool. Well, where should people head to check that out?
Rick has one. It's exerciseforinjuries.com, but there should be a website, Muscle Imbalances Revealed, and they can go to that. I blogged about it on my blog about a week or two ago, so they can click on that link. But really, if you just Google Muscle Imbalances Revealed, you easily be able to find it.
Okay, cool. I'll throw a link in the show notes as well. Yeah, if people want to check it out, and we'll let everyone know. Well, Tony, very last thing, is there anything that people should keep a lookout for? Are you going to be posting like a retrospective of the Harry Potter movie series or anything like that?
By the way, I know you didn't go see it, but you're missing out, dude. That was awesome. Awesome ending.
did you see Twilight? Have you watched that yet?
Come on, give me some credit.
Well, you are pumped. There's a new Jason Statham movie coming out with De Niro.
Oh, I can't wait for that. Let me tell you, I'm excited.
Good.
No, well, sarcasm on that, by the way.
At least tell me you saw Fast Five. That got great reviews.
Yes, it did. I'm gonna go see that when it comes out on DVD. Like, okay. I did get good reviews. Is he in that?
Statham?
Yeah.
Unfortunately not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I know The Rock is, and I have a huge man crush on The Rock. So,
oh, dude, The Rock's in the new G.I. Joe. It's going to be coming out, so.
Oh, I didn't know they were making another one. All right.
Yeah, I'm surprised, too. The first one was pretty terrible.
Well, I'm still looking forward to The Hobbit next year.
That's cool. All right, well, everyone, make sure to check out Tony's website, TonyGentleCore.com. I'll throw up links for all that stuff up in the show notes. And until next time, Tony, thank you for joining us. And
thanks for having me, Kevin. It was good to catch up.
Absolutely. Take care, man.